Welcome to the Lock-In Podcast. This is episode 21 for Wednesday, 19th of August. Today we're going to talk about Playboy of the Western World, the musical. And later in the show, we're going to have music from Aoife Scott for the Better Times project, which is something started by the legendary singer-songwriter Janice Ian in response to the current crisis. My name is Conor Muinichon. I work for Black Knight, and you can find out all about this show at thelockin.ie. That's where you can subscribe to the podcast and indeed review on video or on audio some of the past episodes as well. Today on the show, as I said, we're going to talk about arts and entertainment industry. It's a sector which is facing profound challenges as a result of the pandemic. However, it's also a sector which trades on creativity and imagination. And there are some inspiring examples of that right now. Justin McCarthy is our guest on the show today. He's the producer of Playboy of the Western World, the musical, which goes on stage in Galway next month. Justin, you're welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Justin, Playboy of the Western World. Many people will have heard of it by John Millington Synge, but this is a musical version which you and Diarmaid Defoita adapted as a musical and put on stage in 2016. Tell us, how did that come about? What inspired it?
Well, what happened was I'd started working on it years ago and writing the music because I found that Synge was a very rich source of lyrics, because Synge had originally been a musician anyway. Mm. And his script was extraordinarily lyrical. So it was, not to put too fine a point in it, it was very easy to turn it into, to turn the stuff into songs. And the kind of deceit I had in my head was, imagine Bob Dylan sitting at a bar right through this show, sitting at the bar, the kind of songs he'd write, like, you know, man, these cats are killing each other, and that kind of stuff. And Diarmaid took that concept and ran with it. So we changed the whole thing to, you know, there being a band in the bar, right? And then we did that as a radio play for RTE. And then we realised that actually, if we staged the radio play as a theatrical event, it required very little change of sets and very little rehearsal because people could actually read the scripts out and all this kind of stuff, right? And what we didn't expect was that it worked on so many levels that it became incredibly funny, you know, and really, really entertaining because we brought Rod Goodall in, and Rod's experience between Mocknes and Footsparn and his, like, old school stuff meant that Rod had access to all the old kind of Foley effects, like wind machines and all this kind of stuff. So Rod brought in this massive amount of theatricality around all the sound effects, which you can see being done by the Foley artists during the show. So what you have visually is a thing where there's Foley artists one side, there's a band another side, and there's nine actors in the middle. Running up and down from microphones, doing different parts in the show. And it does, it gives a lightness to the play that isn't actually really there. But we kept as much of the original text as we possibly could, so we didn't actually denigrate it in any way.
So this is a musical, Justin, in which what you're watching on stage is characters who are, it's a play within a play. You're watching the presentation of a radio play, which is a musical version of a stage play, which is Synge's Playboy of the Western World. It sounds fantastic, Justin, and the reviews have been fantastic. And you guys had a pretty fantastic response, I think, from the public when you put it on stage 4 years ago.
Yeah, well, what surprised me most about it was that everybody that came along laughed and said, this is wonderful. And that was the thing. And that went from 17-year-olds to 75, 80-year-olds. Everybody got it, you know, because it's just that there was one of those things happened that I think is very rare, is where the thing just works. Whatever you had been planning, like, you know, you sit down, you go, oh, yeah, I've got this great idea, we're going to do this, blah, 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 blah. And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. Mm. And that's kind of in the lap of the gods. It's not really your call in the end of the day. And that, to me, is the mystery of all of this stuff, is that you do your best and then sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. And you have really no idea why. Everybody will tell you why something worked afterwards.
Yeah.
But they'll never be able to tell you beforehand.
It strikes me that maybe the laughter and the comedy and the whole thing might have been the right response, and a musical version might have been the thing in the Abbey Theatre the first day. Did you have any riots, Justin, in response?
Unfortunately, we didn't. No. I had I had suggested at different stages to do some things that might, you know, create a kind of a moral turpitude, if that's the correct word for it, you know, and maybe have one or two people getting upset about it. But no, I wasn't. In the end of the day, we decided to stay completely respectable and not bring in the kind of decadence, which, you know, the dark recesses of my mind.
It's 4 years later, Justin. I don't know if anyone could have imagined then what we're going through now. Theatres are closed, but Playboy the Musical is going back on stage in September. How are you doing this?
Yes. Well, we're doing it because of the Galway Summer Garden and the way they have managed to do. They did something terribly clever, which was they designed it for the specifications that were brought out that required a specific type of social distancing, and they designed the place to conform with the specific types of social distancing that was required. Mm-hmm. And that makes it all quite easy.
And, you know, and for people, as that. For people who don't know, and we had Maria Moynihan-Lee on the show previously in an early episode in the series. This is an initiative by which it's essentially, it's a field. It's an open field, or it's part of a golf course in Salt Hill. Isn't that right, Justin?
Yes, it's an open field with 30 bell tents and a stretch tent in the middle.
Right.
So the stretch tent is technically open air because there's no sides on it.
Okay.
And the bell tents allow for complete social distancing, but they're about 100 yards from the main tent. So it works as a venue, but it retains all the social distancing requirements. It's terribly clever.
Yes.
And it's just amazing that nobody has thought of it. Mm.
And you can have food and drink delivered to your tent.
Food and drink delivered and everything there. And as I say, what's amazing, it is so simple and so obvious.
It's like having a box at the opera, Justin, but it's in the open air, essentially. And
exactly. That's exactly what it is. Well, we were thinking of seeing if we could sell, opera glasses. I don't know if you remember the old opera glasses.
Oh, the opera glasses, yeah.
You know, seeing if we could find those anywhere and actually, you know, sell them in the tents, you know. I thought that might be quite good.
I know that, so that's one response. Obviously, a venue has been provided and made available there in Galway, and it seems to be going from strength to strength over the last number of weeks. Mm. On the other hand, then, you have this very vibrant, very creative, very busy artist community in Galway, around the country, but in Galway, I suppose, is one place that is worth focusing on. Justin, you're very much involved in that. Is this a case of, let's find something for our artists and creative people to do? There's two aspects of it, really, isn't there, Justin? There is there are artists bursting to perform, and there is a public which is hungry for performance and for art.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that what I find more, you know, I deal with an awful lot more musicians. I would tend to deal with more musicians than I would with actors. But what I find in both cases is that performance and live performance is the lifeblood. It's what actually makes people think. And particularly with performers, it's their work. So that the whole thing of social distancing when it comes to doing stuff on Zoom and doing stuff online is extraordinarily limited because you don't get the emotional feedback. Mm. And all of these thrive on a combination of emotion and empathy, you know, where it's actually the feeling you get from playing to people, or it's the feeling people get when they watch a performance. And it's the liveness of that it doesn't exist at the moment. And that's very serious because... Mm. That's the big skill, I think, in all of this, is actually any kind of performance and the creation of empathy. And I really feel that Zoom meetings and doing it on the internet doesn't really work. And the reason it doesn't work is that's why television exists. And that's why movies exist, because moving pictures demand a very different kind of production value to what live is. Mm. So even though you can make it look like this is what something looks like, it doesn't have the emotional impact. I mean, I think with the best will in the world, the RTE concert, the RTE gig, like two and a half weeks ago, whatever it was, for all the technicians and tech support, it was a great idea and very worthy and all that, but it had absolutely no, I felt it had no impact. It had no, it wasn't like seeing the guys live.
It's a very good point, Justin. And, you know, cinema didn't close down theatres, television didn't close down cinemas, and we still have that important need for that live experience and that as well. And you know, it's, I mean, we started this podcast in April. Schools have been closed since March. We're 5 months into this now at this stage. And it was disappointing yesterday, I think you'll agree, that a lot of the loosening up and the reopening has been paused and rolled back in certain cases now at the moment. I don't want to be pessimistic, but there is no end in sight at this stage. And yet we have an artistic community that needs to be sustained. And we have artists and we have, as I said, the public has that demand as well. Zoom doesn't satisfy it. Where do you see all this going yourself, Justin? Okay. Have you hope or optimism?
Well, I don't know, because I think that what happens with this kind of thing is that there's a side of me, when I see all my friends and see people not working and stuff like that, that I find very depressing. And then there's what I always think is the reality of this is that, you know, for example, the bubonic plague was what destroyed feudalism, right? The feudal society was destroyed by the bubonic plague. And what happened was the landlords and so on and so forth were forced to actually employ people on a reasonable basis. Now, be it that half the population of Europe was wiped out, which is not not something I'd like to see repeated, obviously. But the point is this, is that what this actually represents is a massive social change.
Yes.
And I think that the thing that is incumbent on artists in particular is to imagine the world within that change. And this is what I'm not seeing, which I find deeply disturbing, is that everybody's talking about the jobs as if they were woodworkers. No, nothing wrong with woodworkers and stuff like that. But everybody's talking about their jobs as if they were ordinary jobs. They are not ordinary jobs. Mm. The role of an artist in a society is a completely different thing. And we're now in a position where it's our job to reimagine the future. Right. And I don't see this happening, and I don't see debate on this. I don't see, OK, imagine all of this goes. Who are we and what are we doing? And it's an enormously big question, because we're now left with the classic Darwin thing, adapt or die. Right. And adaptation isn't doing cheap Zoom. That is not adaptation. I am not saying I know this, what the solution to this is. But what I do really believe is that unless we actually try to imagine the world as it may be, which I believe is the fundamental role of an artist, be it a visual artist, a musician, an actor or whatever. Unless we imagine that and try to understand who we are and where we're going, I think that our role can be deeply questioned.
Do you imagine that there's a lot of work in progress going on behind the scenes, writing, creating, or what maybe? I was talking to a friend of mine who's a musician recently, and he said to me, you know, Con, I've written 20 songs in the last few months, and he wouldn't be known as a songwriter, this guy in particular as well. Taylor Swift released an album that nobody expected, and turned out to have had a very fruitful collaboration with other musicians. It's not ideal, but at the same time, do you have any sense that, as you say, you're not seeing it? Perhaps we will see some of this work come to fruition.
Oh, I would think so, but I think that's the first thing about it, is that it's given an awful lot of people. I mean, one of the things I found on the very positive side of all of this was one of the things I found, I live in Spittle, and I found that just everything stopping for 4 months. That everything stopped and people walked around and talked to each other, and it changed the nature of what the whole local community was. And I think that, you know, we will go on from this very differently to the way we went into it. I think there's no doubt about that. And I think that the capacity of people to actually write and imagine is the critical part of this. And I think the upside of it is that it has forced people to actually look at their own creativity and what they're able to do. And I think there's an enormous amount going to come from that. But I think we will actually have to reimagine our role. I have no idea what that's going to be. But I do believe that we're going to have to reimagine our role. Yeah. And that's, you know, I think you see a lot of that. You see people writing an awful lot of songs and stuff like that. But I've also seen an awful lot of musicians do things like do all the courses and learn all the things that they were afraid to do.
Yes.
And there's an enormous amount of that, which I think is all for the good, because I always believe change is the way you look at it. It can be very bad or it can be very good. And it is down to the individual to cope.
It was, you mentioned the bubonic plague there, I think. Was it during that, I think, that Isaac Newton retired to his country estate and wrote Principia and yes. developed his theories of mechanics.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Dante, I think, as well, did I hear?
I don't know.
I think somebody was saying recently that it wasn't written during the plague, but the Inferno was written after it or something like that, I'd heard. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
I can't remember what Newton, I don't know if it was mm-hmm. a bubonic plague, I think it might have been later.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But yeah, I didn't know, but it was to avoid a plague.
Yes.
Yeah. But you know, that's the nature of change.
Justin, I want to say thanks very much for talking to us on the show today and congratulate you, I suppose. Did you have plans already to revive Playboy the Musical or was it precipitated by this?
No, I saw the tent.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. It's what are the dates that it's on?
1st, 2nd and 3rd. That's what it's looking at the moment, 1st, 2nd and 3rd.
Of September, fantastic. And people can book it at galwaysummergarden.ie. Justin McCarthy, producer of Playboy the Musical, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Okay, thanks, Sam.
That's very good. Justin McCarthy, he's the producer of Playboy the Musical, co-written with himself and Dermot DeFuita, who's a well-known actor based in Galway as well. To finish off, as we promised, I want to point this out to you. First of all, this is an interesting piece. I'm interested in looking at data a good deal at the moment, and there are some very interesting kinds of data and searches and information being made available by people like Google. And there is also some very interesting research being done by some people who are very good at curating online news and things like that. One of those is a man named Christopher Penn. He's American. I've followed him online for years. He's involved in podcasting and blogging and lots of other things besides. I'm going to post this. You can see it on the screen on the video version. At the change in, I suppose, the different types of things people were searching for on Google during the pandemic, you can see the top line there, or the top, the very first one there, points out how the change in mobility happened during the pandemic and the initial lockdowns around the world. You can see that there was a great drop in mobility, which gradually recovered up towards July as well. And then the change in things like searches for the word ticket or searches for the word hangover dropped dramatically there around March and April. Searches for restaurants dropped dramatically. And on the other hand, by contrast, things like searches for yeast and recipe and blenders and takeout all went up. Hair clippers, Netflix, things like that. You can see it's just interesting to look at the data. And if you're interested in that kind of thing, you can find out more. The curation is called Lunchtime Pandemic Reading. Chris Penn publishes it each day at around about lunchtime, and you can find it at lunchtimepandemic.substack.com. And finally, as promised, I mentioned Janice Ian, who started a project in response to the pandemic. She's written a song called Better Times Will Come, and she posted it online, and she invited other musicians and friends and indeed anyone to record cover versions of it as well. And you can go and find those cover versions. We'll post the link on the screen. I think it's at janiceian.com. You can find those cover versions. You can listen to different ones and you can donate. Funds are being raised either for the Pearl Foundation, which is to fund college scholarships for mature and returning students. It's Janice Ian's own charity. Or, she suggests, if you prefer, donate to your local food bank or to something else indeed. Now, among the musicians she's invited to take part are people like Mary Black, who's an old friend of hers. And in fact, she's also, through Mary and I think through Francis Black as well, one of the cover versions of it is this lovely Irish version, translation of Better Times Will Come. It's performed by Aoife Scott, who is Mary Black's niece and Francis's daughter. And in Aoife, Aoife, Tá Cáhála Cúrán, agus Andy Mina, agus Mini, agus Isiad Mórid Ní Fóinni, agus Gero Dám Fóinni, a rinne an Taistrú Chán ar Seo. Gudjukig am Nís Fár, Better Times Will Come. That's it. Gudian Chéodarele, an Tachtan Sechúin, Slánga Fóin. Go.
Lockie, Lonnie.